Welcome to The Green on Delaware Public Media. I'm your host, Tom Byrne. As part of our 2024 election coverage, Delaware Public Media is offering a series of candidate conversations. We've reached out to all candidates filed to run in the races for U.S. House and U.S. Senate, as well as governor, lieutenant governor, and insurance commissioner, and invited them to sit down with us. Candidates in each race are being asked about the same set of topics to allow you to get to know them and compare them. The interviews you hear on The Green are edited for time. Full conversations are online at DelawarePublic.org. On this show, we wrap up our candidate conversations in the race for U.S. Senate, which features three candidates seeking to replace Democrat Tom Carper, who is retiring after four terms and 24 years in the Senate. We previously heard from Republican Eric Hansen and the Independent Party of Delaware's Michael Katz. Today, we hear from the Democrat in the race, Congresswoman Lisa Blunt Rochester. She is seeking the Senate seat after serving four terms in Delaware's lone U.S. House seat. Before we jump into some of the issues, many voters in Delaware are already very familiar with you. So I'm curious, is there something you feel voters should know about you that maybe they don't know about you?
Yeah. Oh, well, first of all, I don't know if there's a lot people don't know about me because I talk a lot, you know, and we try to make sure we communicate a lot as well. But I think one thing from my time in the House that I think a lot of people don't probably know is that we had this theme. When Lisa goes to Washington, I yell it out to the audience and they yell back, we all go to Washington. And so a lot of people might not realize that in my tenure in the House, I made it a point to be in multiple caucuses at multiple tables representing Delaware. So, for example, I'm in the Progressive Caucus, but I'm also in the New Dems, which is our business-friendly caucus, because I said to both groups, if you take Delaware, you take all of us. I'm in the Women's Caucus. I'm in the Congressional Black Caucus. I'm an assistant whip. I also am in the Chicken Caucus. I'm also in the Pork Caucus. The Firefighter Caucus. And part of it for me was to be able to lend our voice to all of these tables and be representative of Delaware. And then I think the second thing a lot of people, some people might not know, but it's probably one of the most exciting things to me lately, the best title I've ever gotten, I got last year, which is grandmother. And so I have a granddaughter and I am elated. She brings me so much joy. She brings me bright hope as well right now. And she's an inspiration for the work that I'm doing.
So let's talk a little bit about the work to come, some of the issues that the country is facing. Immigration, obviously, is one of them. There was a bipartisan border reform bill ready to go before many Republicans backed away at the behest of former President Trump. So the basic question, would you support that bill if it was brought up again?
Yes. And I think it goes to the deeper issues of, you know, immigration was something that historically had been a bipartisan issue. And, you know, finally, President Biden, Vice President Harris, working with Republican Senate leaders, were able to come up with a compromise bill that would address our issues. We know that we want to make sure that, you know, illicit drugs aren't coming across the border. And this bill was to really help support that border enforcement. We know that, you know, we want to make sure that we are safe and that we are protected, but also that we are concerned about our workforce and opportunities to make sure our economy is still strong. And so they came up with this bipartisan legislation. And to me, what is important, Donald Trump was the one who actually sort of cut it off at the kneecap. This was an opportunity. And I always say, if you're really serious about it, then vote for it. It is my serious hope that we will be able to come to consensus and get this bill, if not this bill, a compromise across the finish line.
I was going to mention, you mentioned it was a compromise bill. Do you see this bill, if it were to pass as a first step, would there still be, in your mind, more to do on the immigration issue to really get where you want to go?
You know, most definitely. I mean, we have had a broken immigration system for decades now. And, you know, in order for us to be able to deal with this, we've got to make sure that we're coming together. It's my goal in the Senate to continue the work, bipartisan work that I started in the House, and to look for these kind of solutions. Because, again, we're fortunate that border crossings are down now under this president. If people are really paying attention to the, you know, sort of like what's happening, because there's a lot of rhetoric out there, But this president and vice president have done a good job in that regard, but we know we still have so much more to do.
You mentioned reproductive rights earlier, so I want to talk a little bit directly about that. Following the Supreme Court's Dobbs decision overturning Roe v. Wade, the issue of abortion left to the states, creating a patchwork of approaches and leaving questions about other related reproductive issues like IVF. Should Congress step in, and if so, in what way?
This is probably the first time that I can think of that a right was actually taken away from us. It is probably one of the number one things that people approach me on in our state. Donald Trump, I'm not sure it changes from day to day, but we know you got to trust people. When they said, when he bragged about taking away this right, trust that he would do it again. We know that, you know, he has talked about punishing women. And so to me, this is one of the reasons why the Senate is important, because we need to codify Roe versus Wade. Even things like IVF, my granddaughter that I just spoke about, she would not be here if it were not for IVF. We've seen what the impacts are across the country, even on our maternal mortality, where we're a country, the only industrialized country, where the numbers are going up for maternal deaths. And it's three times worse for Black women. And so for me, this issue is one that is important, is one that we need to focus on. It's one that we need to believe people, not just by what they say, but what they have done.
In the wake of the Dobbs decision and some others recently by the Supreme Court, President Biden and others have suggested some effort to reform the court, ethics rules, term limits. What would you support in that realm?
Well, I think, unfortunately, the Supreme Court has made some decisions, whether it's the Dobbs decision, whether it is giving immunity to a president and saying, when we believe as part of our country that rule of law, nobody's above the law. The Supreme Court has done some things recently that have, I think, diminished people's confidence in the Supreme Court. And so I think it's important, as the president has outlined, that we do have a code of conduct, code of ethics. I think that is at the minimum, a code of conduct that is not just them policing themselves is important. I also think that looking at term limits, I think the president had proposed 18 years. I think term limits are really make sense. For me, I think there are some real opportunities to, again, instill confidence in the Supreme Court, because we need that more than ever as we look at our checks and balances.
Voters consistently list the economy as a top issue. The Biden administration touts low unemployment, strong job numbers, along with some other positive economic indicators as signs the country's headed in the right direction. But inflation, higher prices for many everyday goods, things like gas, groceries, continue to leave many people still struggling. What do you feel Congress should be doing to promote economic growth and try to battle back inflation?
For me, I think the role of Congress, we have many areas that we can play. I even put forward an affordability plan as part of our campaign, because there are issues such as housing, where it's probably one of the number one issues I hear up and down the state, where affordable housing is a challenge for people. So as part of our affordability plan, I've got bipartisan legislation already that we want to continue with to really kind of cut the red tape and to get rid of zoning barriers that allow for the creation of affordable housing. There's issues like lowering the cost of goods. One of the big areas, again, bipartisan, that I've been able to work on is strengthening our supply chains. It really wasn't until the pandemic that people even paid attention to the words supply chains. But when you couldn't get PPE, when you couldn't get baby formula, lumber prices went up, so housing prices went up. When those things happened, it meant that the cost of things went up. So I've passed bipartisan legislation in the House. It is now in the Senate with two senators who are Democrat and Republican that don't always see eye to eye. And we're hoping that it's on its way to the president. But that lowers the cost of goods for people. Capping the cost of insulin for our seniors. Again, this was another incredible thing that we did as part of the Inflation Reduction Act that was passed and work that I got to work on as part of a member of the Health Subcommittee in Congress. But the reality is that's only for our seniors on Medicare. We want to make sure that everyone has those same benefits where we can cap the cost again, looking at every way. Part of it is looking at things like price gouging, making sure that we level the playing field. To me, this is probably the top issue, is making sure we have a strong economy and building an economy for now and the future. So I've got legislation on artificial intelligence and making sure we're all literate. I've got legislation on using immersive technology to train people for the jobs of now and the future.
I want to hit a couple of foreign policy issues. We'll start with Israel and Gaza. President Biden has been seeking a ceasefire in Gaza for some time now, to no avail so far. What do you believe the U.S. approach should be in this conflict?
I think October 7th was a very dark day in history. And, you know, we continue to support the president and his efforts to bring peace to that region. We know that Israel has been not just an ally, but a friend in that region of the world. We also know that not only do they have a right to exist, but they have a right to defend themselves. And at the same time, we see the devastation and what is happening to Palestinian families, and believe that humanitarian aid needs to be present, which is one of the reasons why I voted for and supported the legislation, the bipartisan legislation that I did in May. For us, it is truly supporting the president and his efforts, supporting our allies, and really seeking peace, because that right now is the most important thing. I will continue to advocate for peace, and we are, again, just prayerful, actually, for all of those families that are experiencing the trauma, the hostages, those individuals that, the children. This is one of the I think, most challenging things that we've been through in the past year. It's not just this year. So we hope to see peace.
And another area where there is conflict, obviously, is Ukraine. That war continues. Where do you stand on continuing to support the Ukraine as it seeks to fend off the Russian invasion that is now 2.5 years old?
Well, you know, I think it is important that when we say that a friend is a friend and an ally is an ally, that we stick with that and we stand for that. And so I am grateful that I've been able to play a part in supporting Ukraine, particularly against Putin. I mean, we know he is an autocrat. We know he is a dictator. We know that for him, what he is doing really goes against the grain of, you know, self-governance and self-determination. And so I believe that we have to continue to be strong with our ally, that we also have, you know, under President Biden, I think, brought together allies from around the world, also strengthen NATO. And our support, I think, is very important. And I think it's important, too, that it be bipartisan, because this is also about the democratic ideals. It's not just about that one country. It truly is about who do we say we all are as allies and as a country. And so I would continue to support Ukraine.
I want to ask one very Senate-specific question. That is, would you back doing away with the filibuster? Why or why not?
Yes, I would. And, you know, we look at issues of the filibuster over time, you know, what it has been used for. And also when people have said, you know what, we'll put this to the side. Two areas where I felt compelled, I think it really, really also impacted my feelings about the filibuster, were number one, the overturning, you know, of Roe. And the fact that we need to codify Roe versus Wade. The second is, for me, the issue of voting rights. You know, to me, if Mitch McConnell can say, let's put the filibuster aside for the debt limit, but we can't for something as basic and foundational in our country as voting rights, that doesn't make sense to me. It isn't a law. It is an antiquated rule. And to me, what I try to do, how I try to govern, is I try to work and find bipartisan solutions, because to me, those are the ones that are lasting. I feel like if something's going to hold us back from the progress of voting rights, that's not the direction I want to go. So I am for getting rid of the filibuster.
We're asking all candidates we're talking to in this election about trust in government? Because it seems like this is a time where there is a stronger distrust of government and calls for more transparency and accountability. If elected, what role do you feel you could play personally and as a U.S. senator in delivering greater transparency and accountability and just generally building trust in government?
Well, you know, first of all, I think to me, even doing a program like this, I hope that it creates some hope and some confidence in the fact that there are people that are getting the job done. A lot of times the cameras don't show the work that I've been able to do in a bipartisan way on bills like Clean Slate, which, you know, if somebody served their time, low-level nonviolent offense, they should be able to have a second chance and a clean slate. We've been able to even pass it at the Delaware local level because of the leadership that, you know, I've had with my Republican colleagues on the federal level. My work on supply chains, again, bipartisan, telehealth, bipartisan. I literally can go through all kinds of legislation that we've been able to work on and been able to pass because we work together. And so I try to use every opportunity I can to talk about those things to instill confidence. I think the other piece for me is the theme of our campaign is actually Bright Hope. It was the name of the church that my grandmother attended for 70 years in Philadelphia. And to me, it's not just the name of a church. It is truly a way of being, even when things feel dark. It is my goal to bring Bright Hope to the Senate, bring that Delaware Bright Hope to the Senate.
Finally, I want to ask if there's an issue we haven't discussed that you feel is not getting the attention it deserves in this election cycle and how you would address it if elected.
Hearing from the people, we did this Delivering for Delaware tour that we're still on. We've come out with an agriculture plan. We've come out with, you know, an affordability plan. But hearing from people, one of the things that maybe doesn't get the attention that it really needs that, and I pass out index cards sometimes when I'm meeting with roundtables. And so I did one just the other day and almost every card came back: housing, affordable housing, homelessness. To me, the ability to create more affordable housing, the ability to make sure that people don't have to work three jobs to afford the house, that's important. And it's kind of a for me, something that I want to work on because I know the impact of a good, clean, safe place. To me, building generational wealth is part of it, as part of home ownership. So I feel housing is an area that we want to tackle head on.
That's Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate Congresswoman Lisa Blunt Rochester. Our full conversation with her is available at DelawarePublic.org. Up next, we learn more about the rebirth of the recently closed Creative Vision Factory in Wilmington. This is The Green on Delaware Public Media.